Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and I'm here with Tristan Vick.
How's it going?
Pretty good. We've got a lot to talk about today. A lot has happened over the weekend. It was a footy-filled weekend.
Yes.
We had an FC Dallas game. We had a U.S. men's national team game. We also had some pretty significant news come out over the weekend that we'll cover later.
Actually, Dustin, you're missing the most important thing that happened this weekend.
Do tell.
The 21st was the 10th anniversary of His Royal Highness David Beckham making an appearance in MLS when he first signed with the Galaxy. That's right. It's been 10 years since Bex came across the pond.
Well, I don't know how I missed that.
I had a candlelight vigil. I know that there was a few hundred people that showed up, but other than that.
Anyways, so let's talk about where things stand coming into this week after the eventful weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got FC Dallas sitting high atop the Western Conference standings with 34 points and two games in hand over Sporting Kansas City. So looking good for FC Dallas.
It's a strong position to be in right now, right before the All-Star break.
For sure. And not only do they have two games in hand on Sporting Kansas City, they've also got two games in hand on Toronto. And if we were to make up all 6 points, then we would be tied with them in the supporter shield race.
I think this season, FC Dallas fans should be hoping that we don't really care too much about that. We care more about MLS Cup. It'd be nice to see them make the final, get a trophy. But hey, if you're at the top of the table, there's not a whole lot you can do about that. So the wins keep coming.
Yep, that's all you can do is just keep winning. Just hope that you keep that momentum riding into the postseason. But like I said, definitely a nice place to be sitting right before the All-Star break, right here at the middle of the season.
Definitely. I think that it's becoming more important this year that FC Dallas fans temper their expectations in some of these away matches that we're going to get to. But ultimately, when you look at the table, we're scoring just as many goals as most other teams. There's no real like competitive advantage we're having other than eking out a lot of really close, efficient victories. And you've got to really credit Pareja for juggling this roster and keeping us at the top of this table in the Western Conference, which not as strong as it was last season, but definitely still has some strength near the top.
Yeah, it's definitely an asset to have a coach that can make the most of the squad he's got when the squad has been ravaged all season from injury and from players, the best players being gone on international breaks.
Yes.
And that brings us to a player that did not make it to the Montreal game. Mauro Diaz stayed home with an injury.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mauro was just feeling it. I mean, Montreal's a long way. He had some tightness in his groin, according to the official club statement. But I think it was more of an issue with regards to whether or not you wanted to risk him for this type of a match. As we saw in the match, it was a pretty physical battle against Montreal, a team that's still trying to kind of find its identity this season. I think that Diaz will be back in Frisco on Saturday, ready to go. I'm so glad that we don't have any midweek matches that he has to play in. I'm glad that we'll hopefully have Acosta and Hedges back for that match. I don't know if they're going to get rested or not. I can't imagine Hedges gets rested. He hasn't really played much in the Gold Cup. So I think Hedges is back in that starting lineup. And Diaz, let's hope. I mean, we didn't need him, but be nice to have him.
Yeah, Diaz is definitely a nice to have.
Free kicks, set pieces are completely different when we don't have that guy in the lineup. So definitely want to see him back in the starting 11.
Most definitely. So we traveled up to Montreal and eked out a 2-1 victory, came back from behind. So what are some of the things that stood out to you in this game, Tristan?
So the first thing that you got to talk about is you got to talk about Christian Coleman. He's in the starting lineup. He's paired up top with Max Arruti and Lamar. And really and truly, when you look at the starting lineup before the match, you would probably thought, well, he'll be subbed down at the 60th minute. Tesho Akindele will come in and maybe we'll get a goal. But really, from the get-go, Coleman was threatening. He was making good runs. It seems like this break during the Gold Cup has really benefited the team chemistry. And I thought that he was on the same page as a Rudy and some of the midfield.
Yeah, he was always in a very smart position, a very threatening position whenever the team went forward. And it just seemed inevitable that something was going to happen that game.
Yeah, I mean, when you're the center channel striker, you're expected to be on the same page as those in the midfield so that they can play those through balls. I thought that obviously he had the goal taken away that was rightfully a goal. I mean, that ball was a yard inside and over the line, but MLS doesn't have goal line technology, so we can't really complain too much. But I think he knew he was going to get a goal that night if he kept trying. And I don't know if I texted you this at halftime, but my notes at halftime were basically FC Dallas should be ahead. We're the better team. We've had more opportunity and Coleman looks like a completely different player. So I'm assuming that he'll keep that form, but who knows? I mean, you could tell early on, even though we went down a goal, it really wasn't going to be a 1-0 loss. It was going to be FC Dallas is going to get a goal. You could tell really in the, I guess probably it was 30 minutes in that I just sat there. I was like, we're going to get a goal. I'm not worried about our lineup. I'm not worried about Coleman. You just had this feeling that the more chances we were creating, eventually we were going to get something.
Yeah. Even when we went down, it didn't feel like we were out of the game. Sometimes, like for instance, when we were up in Portland and Vancouver and or especially in the Portland game, when we went down, you never felt like you were the team was going to be able to battle back. You just felt like maybe they would eke out a draw, but it didn't really feel like they were going to make much of that match. And then this one, it was much different. We went down a goal in the first half, probably midway through the first half. I forget when the actual goal was scored, but you could see it really didn't bring the players down. And you never lost hope that they were going to be able to come back. And it kind of reminded me of like earlier in the morning, Liverpool, I was watching their preseason game against for the Premier League Asia Trophy against Leicester, and they went down early. And it was the same feeling. You never felt like they were actually out of it just because of the way they were playing. And so it was actually a good soccer day for me.
No, I mean, that's going to be the best trophy that you guys win this year. So
oh, brutal.
I'm looking forward to seeing that next to your five European Cups that you have in the trophy case over in Anfield.
We'll see how it shakes out. I've got a good feeling about this week. And speaking of good feelings, I'd like to take credit for Coleman's goals this week. I on last Sunday, I was eating at Matito's and I looked over the stadium and I looked up and I noticed that the street that is right across from the stadium is called Coleman. And I was like, this is an omen. And so you're welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, you did say that. I will give you credit for that. You called the goal scorer. I called the score line. So definitely keep those goals coming for him. I also think that while Coleman isn't exactly Coleman, it works.
You take what you can get, right?
That's right. That's right. I think that,
that man needed a little help.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So some of the other big takeaways from this, I felt like were, I mean, you can't talk about this match without mentioning Minor Figueroa. I mean, he was partnered at center back. He played 48 hours or less than 48 hours before that in Honduras's quarterfinal against Mexico. Didn't win, but they played an incredible match. He had a great game and he comes back and he plays the full 90 minutes up in Montreal. I feel like that's probably one of the best signings that Oscar Pereira's made in terms of somebody that he can rely on no matter what the situation is, somebody that's going to be consistently there and plug and play anywhere on that back line, and Figueroa's ready to go. And he was ever present in this match. His marking was great. He, I think after that first goal, realized, hey, we can't let the impact get behind us. We can't let the impact go unmarked in any situation. And so he was really, really vocal back there for an FC Dallas backline that's been shuffled and prodded and cut up more than I can count this season. So it's good to see players playing like that in MLS.
Yeah, I just echo that. I mean, my notes for the first half
there you go.
Had two words: formidable Figueroa. And yeah, you could just definitely see him take the game by the reins and just drive that back line.
And if you look at I agree. And if you look at the goal that they scored, the second goal that FC Dallas scored, it was played down to the back, long pass to Coleman. And that's directly as a result of Figueroa making sure that back line doesn't let something happen. And then instead of rushing it, Figueroa looks up, they look for the pass and they make that pass, and the connection for him to run onto that ball is there. So yeah. No, I think when Hedges comes back, they'll kind of say, hey, who are you again? I mean, we're glad to have you, but we've been doing all right ourselves. So it's a weird, really strange dynamic for this year in MLS because of the Gold Cup and because there's been so many starts and stops for these international players that it's almost, I mean, I feel like we haven't had our complete team ready and available for selection yet. And so as Kellen and as Hedges come back, I'll be really interested to see how they adapt, because I mean, Coleman looked great in both of his goals, but at the same time, he hasn't looked great all season. So
yeah, it's definitely a good problem to have when your stand-ins and your understudies are performing as well as they are. And so trying to figure out, having a little bit of a selection headache, as they say, it's a good problem to have, but it'll definitely be interesting to see who gets the nod going forward and what kind of chemistry is developed between, you know, the center back partners and the defense, and as well as in the midfield with Acosta coming back in, presumably taking Ioa's spot. But Ioa and Grezo have been playing well together. They pretty well shut down a pretty feisty Montreal team there.
No, Ioa has played really well, but I almost wonder if they'll actually put Acosta maybe in the, not the number 10 position, but like for Lamar, and maybe move him inside and have Aruti play up top as a single striker, and then make make Diaz and Acosta kind of play like a dual midfield, attacking midfielders, where Acosta maybe is a little bit more of supporting attacking mid, but Diaz has freedom to roam in that number 10 role. I'll be interested to see, because before Diaz was healthy, Acosta was banging in goals and assists left and right. So
it'll definitely be interesting to see what Perea does going forward. And speaking of Perea, one thing I noticed that was pretty evident to me during that game was, I think that they noticed something in their game film about Montreal that caused them to change up the style of play just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely noticed they were a lot more direct this game than they have been. Generally, they'll kind of work down the side and Grana and Barrios will kind of play off each other, and then they'll look in to whip in a cross. But even when Grana would surge forward, his passing was never, he would never look to go down the sideline. His passes were always in towards the box, in towards somebody. And they definitely had a very direct style of play, and it was effective. And so kudos to whoever spotted that and implemented it.
Well, I think you got to credit Grana for those types of opportunities, because FC Dallas has never had problems getting players forward. But I think that Grana had a little bit more confidence every time that he did go forward, he kind of hesitated often and then realized, no, this is when I go. And when he didn't need to, he would pause and then he would wait for his opportunity. And I think that's a sign of a veteran. That's why you signed the guy. I guess that's why the MLS All-Star team had him on there. But I can't imagine that we're going to see any drop in play, because he had some great crosses. He didn't create any goals, but he was something that they were forced to account for. I'm rewatching the second Coleman goal, and if you want to see a brilliant cross-field pass, just go and look at the second goal, and Grezo just looks right up, sees the Coleman run,
and that's,
hits him dead on.
And that's kind of what I was getting at, is, I mean, it wasn't just Grana playing more direct. It was Grezo. Instead of, you know, playing out wide or trying to find an outlet, he just looked up and hit Coleman on that long cross, and it was straight up the field.
Yep.
So once we got the lead, I know you have been vocal in the past questioning some of Oscar's substitutions and his strategy trying to manage the game. What did you think of his substitution strategy this time?
I thought it was good, but the way that he positions guys like Tesho, we didn't really see enough of Cermino to really get much of an opinion on him. But I think Zimmerman's a calming influence. I think if you have something that's working, don't break it. And I think Barrios, towards the end of matches, requires a little bit of tempering. And so it's not a bad thing to bring on a guy like Tesho. Definitely agreed with putting Zimmerman on there. I think FC Dallas does a great job of killing these games off and getting that two-goal lead or the one-goal lead. It allows them to kind of play their game with regards to not wasting time, but just kicking the ball around, still trying to pursue opportunities, but not feeling the pressure as much. And so they're able to kind of keep the defender set in the hole or the midfielder set in the hole right in front of the back four. And Grezo does basically mops everything up. The guy's a beast when it comes to that. And so really the substitutions just confirm what we already know, which is that we have probably the best midfield in MLS.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the substitutions either. I thought that maybe they could have made a substitution a little bit closer to the second Coman goal instead of 10 minutes later. But when looking back, I think it was probably a good call. They brought on Sermana and they switched to even before that, they'd kind of switched to a more of a soaking up the pressure.
They
kind
of had a back five almost with.
Well, they didn't really switch to the back five until. They didn't really switch to the back five until Zimmerman came off. When Sermana came on, they kind of were like a 4-3-2-1 where Rudy was up top and then Sermana kind of slotted in the middle, right in front of the defense. But then when Zimmerman came on, they kind of slipped back into the five.
Yeah, I think that one of the nice things about guys like Hollingshead is that Hollingshead is not going to do one thing better than anybody on the pitch, but he's definitely going to give you 110% at whatever task you ask him to do. So he's kind of the jack of all trades when it comes to that. And he's a very valuable player for that reason. You can kind of plug and play him. He's basically like what a Kellen Acosta was 2 years ago, in that you could kind of put him anywhere and ask him to do something and he would do it decent. And so I think that's been really valuable with this roster turnover right now. So I was listening to a podcast recently about MLS and they were talking about what they thought the league was like, I don't know, like 5-6 years. And I think this match is perfect example of what the league's become, which is that we don't have the best players in the world, but we have some coaches that are able to do a lot with a little. And I don't mean that in a negative way, in that I think FC Dallas has a lot, but we have a salary cap and we have these designated players. And I think you saw in this match, and we don't respect the international breaks, right? We're on a different calendar. And this match had our best center back and our second best midfielder missing. And we actually had both of our best midfielders missing with Diaz out, but the others were on international duty and we were able to make key strategic substitutions and really made it, I think, not just a solid win, but something that kind of makes the rest of the league perk up and say that when FC Dallas comes to town, it's not going to be a guaranteed draw or 3 points.
Well said. You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick. All right, so
there was another match this weekend.
Yeah, finishing out the Saturday.
Yeah, so it was a soccer Saturday here in Dallas area with the U.S. national team coming to Jerry World at AT&T Stadium, home of the Cowboys. And copyright NFL, yada, yada. Please don't sue us for saying your name. But they played Costa Rica Ticos and were thoroughly frustrating at times, but then the last 40 minutes of that match, the United States dominated and really seemed to have their act together.
Totally went and redeemed themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. The first half was fairly dull with some decent opportunities, but there was just one thing missing. And that thing happened to be Clint Dempsey. But
yeah, that first half kind of embodied the way I've come to view U.S. men's national team soccer. It, for whatever reason, I have a hard time getting excited by it. I love my country, but our soccer team has never really excited me. But like you said, that second half, it was exciting, and it definitely at least entertain me the rest of that night.
So there's some positives to look for. And even if you're not a fan of watching the U.S. national team, because we aren't Spain, and we aren't Brazil, and we definitely aren't Germany. But one thing we do have is we have some very fit, a lot of physically imposing defenders, and then with some very fit forwards. And so guys like Jordan Morris are really fun to watch. Josie, when he's on, is a lot of fun to watch because he really has a lot of unique dynamic ability with both his size and pace. If he could just get that finishing down, same thing with Giassi Zardes. I think that when you watch the match like this, you have to keep in mind two things. First, United States has brought kind of a second team squad where a lot of these players, some of these players will be going to Russia next summer. Not all of them will. In fact, more probably are not going to Russia than are. But second, you have to also keep in mind that some of these guys just started playing for the national team in the past year or two. And so guys like Acosta and Nagby and Areola really haven't had a big run out. Eric Lehigh was in this match. I haven't seen that guy in the U.S. national team shirt in quite a while. And then Jordan Morris is inconsistently called in. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt at first. But when they subbed Dempsey in, there was Dempsey, obviously, he's like 34, 35 now. But one of the things that I noticed was if you look at the left side with Jorge Villafana and the midfielders over there, they're great. I think Villafana would be a great left back next year in Russia. I think he's really done a good job of shoring that spot up because nobody wants to see Fabian Johnson at left back again when his natural position is left midfield back in Borussia Mönchengladbach. But on the right side, you had Graham Zusi, who's kind of just our best right-footed player, I guess you could say. He's not really a right back, but that's where he's kind of been pushed at the past year. And so he plays that there, and then he has Paul Areola in front of him. And I don't think that partnership's really had much time to develop, but when they subbed off Areola for Dempsey, you didn't have Areola coming back and marking or tracking back as much because Dempsey, that's just not something he does. And so what happens is it forces Zusi to kind of step up. It forces Zusi to really take charge of that area defensively and allows Dempsey to play a little bit more freely up top. And that led to the first goal, which, by the way, I mean, these goals that they scored were really top class goals for the U.S. national team. I know that sometimes our goals aren't always the prettiest, but the two goals were amazing. And I think that Dempsey really played a great pass in. It allowed Altidore to really take and use that opportunity to get the goal. And you could tell Josie was just amazing. I mean, there was nothing about it that couldn't be, I don't want to say written that way if you were a writer, but it was definitely one of the best goals that I've seen Josie take. And you could tell he was ready to get that goal.
So let's talk about Clint Dempsey's goal.
Yeah, that was a very, very cheeky free kick. Goes to the outside of the wall, sneaks it in near post, really leaves the keeper wondering why his wall didn't do better. But I mean,
yeah, it's very definitely a veteran move, seeing that gap there and just kind of curling the ball past the wall.
Yeah, I mean, like Dempsey's had some great goals over his years, but you don't really think of him as somebody that has a very like a dangerous style, very violent free kick. It's more direct, and it's going to be something that is right on target. And if you can't get to it, it's going in, but he's not always going to place it in the right spot. But that was something very clinical, I thought, to place it there on the outside.
Yeah. And what's more is it had some historical significance. It tied him with Landon Donovan with 57 goals atop the U.S. all-time U.S. men's national team goal scoring record.
Yeah. I mean, that Dempsey's going to break the record. He's going to be the all-time goal scorer. I don't think anybody's going to catch him for quite a while, but it was quite a way to do it. He's only a couple hundred miles or 100 miles or so from his hometown of Nacogdoches, Texas.
Pride of Nacogdoches.
He's the pride of Texas, in my opinion. I mean, I think that Dempsey is the... You're going to see a lot more players coming onto the league, coming onto the national team squad that are like Dempsey. who come from smaller towns maybe and kind of just work their way into or were spotted early on now. But what Dempsey, his story, who those of you who aren't familiar with his story, I mean, it's spectacular. The way that the guy lived in Nacogdoches, grew up in essentially a trailer park in this tiny town in East Texas, and
drove 3 hours a day to come to practice. Yeah. Did his homework in the car on the way to and from. That's some dedication, and it definitely paid off for him.
Well, and so I think there's a
30 by 30 or whatever.
Yeah, 30 for 30. They did a great little short on him. But one of the things that's crazy coming out of that is his sister was like a nationally ranked tennis player. And the sister basically was, they were told, like, we can either do your sister with tennis or soccer, and they chose her. And not shortly thereafter, she had a freak brain aneurysm or something and died. And since then, he's been basically dedicated everything to his sister. So it's a crazy, crazy story. But at the same time, I think he's very motivated. And that's one of the reasons why. So you can definitely tell that it meant a lot to him. He was very excited to get that goal. But I also think that he wants that record. He wants that trophy. He wants to be on the roster next year for Russia. And I think after this tournament, you can't argue against that.
Yeah, let's talk about one of the other standouts for the game. Darlington Nagby is getting a lot of plaudits for his performance in that game.
Yeah, he's like the Dirk Kuyt of the U.S. men's national team. He just like does everything, runs. He's the Labrador Retriever of the U.S. men's national team. He basically, last night at least, was always on the ball, always looking for the pass, always looking for some sort of space that he could get into. And so I thought he played really well. I think that he was important in keeping the back line of Costa Rica occupied. One of the reasons why some teams get smothered in matches like this when they're going forward is that they're not threatening on all sides of the pitch. And Nagby's runs threatened them in the key spots of the defense that they needed to. And it made their center backs and their goalkeepers and their wing backs make a decision on whether or not they were going to, whether or not they were going to pick up Nagby or the player they should be marking. And it created a lot of mismatches and gave them a lot of opportunities to get the ball out wide, push it inside. And I mean, like, how great is it to have a midfielder on the U.S. men's national team that you're not used to seeing regularly, but that can be comfortable on the ball, has some technical first touch? Like, that's something we haven't always had.
Yeah. And he definitely was entertaining to watch, and he definitely got the ball forward and helped us transition from defense into offense, and had some really nice little 1-2s up the wing there.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to be comfortable with those wing players.
Yeah, I think if I had a criticism, it would be that whenever he'd get the ball around the 18-yard box on that far side, he turned it over a couple too many times for my taste. I think it's something that he can improve on, but it just an awareness of where the other players are once he gets himself stuck in down there closer to the opponent's goal. But his midfield vision was definitely on point that game.
No, he's a true box-to-box midfielder that can play out wide if he needs to. And that's versatility is what you need when it comes to picking a World Cup roster. And people shouldn't look at the Gold Cup as just the Gold Cup. They should look at it as picking a World Cup roster and trying to make the case for some of these more fringe players on the U.S. men's national team being included in that squad. And I think Nagby has definitely booked himself a spot based on this performance.
I find it hard to argue with that.
Well, the final is on Wednesday night, and I think it's in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium. It's going to probably be at some ungodly hour on Fox Sports 1, but
it's going to be 8:30 Central.
Oh, okay, that's not too bad, actually. I can't stand when they say 8 o'clock and it doesn't kick off till 8:45. It kills my planning around these things.
My DVR dies at the end, especially if it goes any later than normal. I'll miss the last 5 minutes of the game. Almost every FC Dallas game.
Yeah, it's the first rule of soccer is set your DVR to an hour past when it ends, especially when it's in knockout stages.
For sure. So, yeah, they play Jamaica, and I'm going to go with another 2-1 USA victory. What do you got?
So Jamaica, I watched the highlights and that's a weird team. They did some really weird voodoo style celebrations that weren't really celebrating. They were like holding a team meeting in the middle of the pitch. So I don't know what's really going on in that squad. Their goalkeeper was good. 2-1's good. I think the U.S. takes it 2-0. I don't think they let a goal in. So I think 2-0 to the Americans.
All right. You heard it here first, folks.
That's right. Bruce gets his first trophy after coming back to take the reins again. Oh, and over under on Bruce swears is definitely, I'd say, 3.5, and I'm taking the over.
Okay. Well, yeah, so long as he doesn't, you know, cuss out the ball kids this time. The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage. All right, so let's transition into a little bit of news and goings on in the world of MLS. We'll start out with some big news on the television front. What do you got for us, Tristan?
Yeah, so this morning I was looking at Twitter and saw that there was a Sporting Business News article that was reporting that the MLS had rejected a quadrupling of the worldwide media rights for the next year, or next contract that they're up for, $4 billion over 10 years, which is roughly 25 to 50% of what the NBA media rights are, to give you some perspective. But the condition for that bid was that they would have to have some sort of promotion and relegation system. And so I texted you this and I said, this is a pretty big story in my opinion, but you seem to favor that idea. And
I love the idea of a promotion relegation system. I don't know that we're ready for it yet.
Who's the second league then? Who's the second league?
So right now it's the USL and the NASL are both kind of billed as the second league. I think you'd have to make a choice there and neither one of them would like it. I think before we get into the promotion relegation, I think that it's important to talk about the details of this offer. And you got to look at where it's coming from. It's coming from the owner of the Miami FC team, who is trying to get into the MLS, but there's no way in. And so he's trying to buy his way in with the media rights. I think that's a little shady. I can definitely see why the MLS might reject it on face value.
So from what I understand, the spokesman of MLS says they can't negotiate rights until they're in the bidding process, which that's fine, whatever. That's your boilerplate. But there is no way that some owners are not calling the league offices tonight and saying, you did what? I mean, that's a lot of money.
Top half of the table is calling and saying, hey, why didn't you do that? And the bottom half is saying, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's... well, and so basically what I understand is they have ultimate growth plans to take the teams to almost, I think, just around 28 teams. Currently, like, confirmed, we're at 22 teams right now. But they're looking at adding, obviously, they have the LAFC club that's coming in, and then the Miami FC team. And if they can ever get a stadium, they've been trying to do this for, I feel like, years. Officially, it's been three years, but I mean, it's been longer than that. I don't see how they don't let Beckham get his team, because when they signed Beckham, they said you get the option for a franchise for $25 million, which is like a fifth of the cost now. So it's makes no sense for Beckham not to purchase a franchise. The only question is, does he put it in Miami or does he eventually get fed up with that process and move it somewhere else? I think he stays there, but I feel like it's going to take longer than what he wants.
And so maybe this was their way of trying to speed up the process.
Yeah, I mean, money talks in soccer. I mean, so I can understand if it is. But in my opinion, promotion relegation on those USL and ASL teams, I think the expansion is going to hurt. They have to kind of say, we're going to stop at 24. And then we're going to start looking at these other markets and using a promotion relegation system to incorporate the potential for those clubs to move up, not just the franchise fees.
Yeah, I just don't know that Americans in their professional sports really would embrace it as much as I would. I don't know. It'd be definitely interesting to see. And I think you mentioned it would definitely bring a lot of attention to the league, and it definitely has its pros. I just can't see it happen. And I think that overall, a lot of in America, the league owners kind of have a little bit of a monopoly, and I can't see them giving up that and having the chance of getting relegated and losing out on the guaranteed money that the MLS gives them.
So that's the big issue, is the guaranteed money. And if you want to really take a step back and look at what's motivating somebody to stay or leave, it's that guaranteed money.
Bingo.
But at the same time, you have to remember that the MLS is dependent on more of that in-stadium ticket revenue right now than most sports. And they want to get to a model where they have more TV money coming in. So if you have a $4 billion offer out there, then you're an FC Dallas that's only drawing 14,000 people to your stadium, or another team like San Jose that has a smaller stadium that can't fit 40,000 like in Orlando and Seattle. I think that you are really seriously considering that, because think about the way that would work. You would theoretically have the opportunity to have a San Antonio team in the league as well. You could have some really good Texas rivalries. I think that they would only make it so that two teams go down to that lower league. I think there's an easy way to structure it that would have two teams going down and then maybe a playoff between the third place team of the second division against the third from bottom team in the MLS, and the winner of that playoff, like they do in Germany, stays in the league or goes up to the league. I mean, I think there's a way to structure it.
Yeah. And if you didn't want to make the USL or the NASL angry, you could potentially take the top team from both of them as your two guaranteed teams and then do something else like that. There's plenty of things that could happen here.
Well, so the way that you would create I think the one way that you would be able to do that is you have similar to like what you have in England, where you have like parachute payments. And so when a club gets relegated, they get, I don't know what it is now, like $90-120 million of that TV money. So even if they were only in the Premier League for one season, they're still able to get a pretty good financial windfall to cushion that blow down. And sure. And people will say we've signed contracts based on X, Y, or Z, but that don't have promotion relegation when we bought our franchise fee or whatever. But this would be the next TV contract. The amount of money would be substantially greater than anything they've had. It's quadrupling what they currently have. And I think that any owner is crazy not to think about it, because it sets this league apart from anything. And if you look at the U.S. sports landscape, the MLS has never really competed against baseball or basketball or football or college football. The MLS has competed against players or fans of other teams. Like, even if you take yourself, right? You followed Liverpool first, and then 3 or 4 years later, you realize, hey, I live 20 minutes from FC Dallas. Maybe I should like watch a game or two. And then now you're doing a podcast. So it's basically at the expense of other soccer leagues. And this makes MLS fall in line with that internationally and creates some appeal domestically.
Yeah, time will tell. We'll see where this goes, if it has any legs or if it just fades into oblivion.
I think it's got legs. That's my prediction.
All right. You heard it here. Second prediction of the show for us. All right. The other bit of news that we've got is that the MLS has gone ahead and gone forward with their video assistant referee system, and it's going to be implemented in 2 weeks.
Yep. It'll be the first week of August when they get back from the All-Star game that they're going to start using this in regular season matches.
All right. So before we talk about how we feel about it, let's talk about what the actual rules are going to be.
Yeah. So the way that they're going to do this, and there's a great article on ESPN FC that interviews Howard Webb, who's basically the MLS director of officials. And he talks about how it'll only be used for goals, penalty decisions, red cards and then mistaken identities in issuing a red or yellow card. And they will also allow for some retrospective punishment for that. They won't allow it to overrule a head referee. So if the referee is notified that a VAR review needs to take place, they can still overrule the decision based on their interpretation. Like a handball, for instance, they could deem that the handball, the arm was in the motion of play and wasn't a violation or a penalty that warranted a foul. And so that's kind of the basics of it, those four situations, mm-hmm. plus the main rule being that the head referee still has final say.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think that it's surprising that we don't have some sort of mechanism for at least goals in the MLS. I think we were looking up the cost of a goal line technology system, and it's kind of outrageous. I think the EPL is paying $150,000 a ball or something outrageous like that. So that kind of explains why we don't have something like that in the MLS. You know, that seems kind of cost prohibitive, but I'm looking forward to having the VAR.
No, I think the goal line technology is something that'll go down in price as the technology develops and becomes more widely adopted. But with the VAR, I'm skeptical. I'm always of the opinion that it's great to get things right, but I find it absolutely a part of the match to just sit there and complain about referee decisions. I mean, especially in the World Cup when you get these referees from all over the world, which is always fun to see. But at the same time, you get some referees that maybe, I mean, if anybody who watched the USA Slovenia match from 2010 World Cup knows exactly what I'm talking about. And at the same time, the referee never held to account. I think that this is great, but if I were you, I would say that you would want to have a video or a referee give a press conference afterwards to support their major decisions and explain them, and not just these written reports. VAR is a good step for when it comes to red cards and yellow cards, but when it comes to goals and penalties, I think the human eye and the initial call should stand.
See, I kind of feel the opposite direction. I feel like the goals, maybe not penalties. I think that's probably the referee's discretion, and it's part of the game, part of what we love, the passion there, and like whenever a call goes your way or whenever it doesn't. Goals, I think, should definitely be video reviewable, but I'm not sure how much else that I would want to be video reviewable, mainly because I don't want it to break up the flow of the game. So I would welcome, like I said, I'm going to quantify my earlier statement. Earlier I said that I'm welcoming VAR, but only if it doesn't break up the flow of the game. Like for instance, take college football or the NFL, right? It takes forever for challenges to go and replays and all that stuff. It kind of makes watching those games unbearable. And that's one of the things that I love about soccer, is that you got 45 minutes, you got halftime, you got 45 minutes, and then the game's over, and then you can go about your day.
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. You don't want it to turn this into adding 5 minutes of added time on each half or something.
Exactly.
Well, so here's my thought on that. And that would be that the initial, it looks like the average review and the test matches that they did in this lecture that Howard Webb did for the MLS referees earlier the year said they take about 2.5 minutes. And that's with less than one review per match. I think that they'll get faster, but I also think there will be things like what happened in the Confederations Cups. And you're looking at a tournament that has referees like the World Cup from all over that maybe coach or ref in leagues that don't use this technology, that are new to that technology and have ref for many years without this technology. And so when you create a new tool to be used, the chances of it being used correctly and efficiently are much less than it being a huge hindrance and maybe confusing the referees. And there were a number of situations in the Confederations Cup this year where the VAR was the story coming out of the match and not the match itself. I would So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants that to be the case. I think
you're going to have it in these big tournaments, though, because just like you do with the new offsides rule from the past couple of years and it being open to interpretation, you've got all of these referees coming in for this one tournament, and they probably don't referee while they may be UEFA or FIFA level referees. That's because they're reffing World Cup qualifiers every 2 months, not weekend matches in a league.
Yeah, but here you're talking about the World Cup, and the story here is about the MLS. And I think you're right. I think the more that they do it, the faster they'll get. And I think that in the MLS, at least, you won't have that problem that you're talking about, because all of the referees will be MLS referees who've been trained the same way. And I don't think that's going to be a huge problem.
That's probably true. The best part about this is going to be the referees when they do the when they say they're going to the video, they draw a giant rectangle with their arms to the camera, and that's their signal universally that I need to look at a video screen. And so it'll definitely create lots of controversy initially.
I bet there'll be some good memes from that.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Like, so the referee drawing things into thin air.
Yeah, it'll be different to see that type of a tool available for these referees. But at the same time, I mean, it's in the MLS at least, I think it'll go pretty smoothly because it's America. We've had this in pretty much every major sport for at least the past 5-6 years. And fans will be pretty accustomed to it. I imagine referees will be as well, as long as they are able to do it in a timely fashion. I don't have a big problem with it.
I don't know that Christian Coleman would have a big problem with it either.
That's a perfect example of something that would fall into that goal situation.
Yep.
So, no, I'm looking forward to it. I just worry about, like I said, international tournaments like the World Cup that have referees from leagues that aren't using it.
Gotcha.
Let us know what you think. Contact us on Twitter, social media, at Dallas Soccer Show. And we'll definitely read some of the tweets that we get next episode, as well as we have a website, DallasSoccerShow.com, that we'll try and post some stuff to. We're trying to focus on the episodes more than the website, but if we get something up there this week, that'll be good too.
Yep. As always, share. If you like our show, please share with your friends. Help spread the word. It kind of, you know, it'll make us feel better that we're not just recording this for our moms.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. So, and you can also share us on, or you can also subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud.
Quick match preview coming up this weekend. FC Dallas is taking on Vancouver Whitecaps FC back in Frisco. They should have their full squad available to them. Looks like it's going to be about a 7:30 kickoff, and we're looking for 3 points. Western Conference opponent, that's when you need them.
Yeah, I'm actually looking to go to this game with my daughter, and I'm purchasing those little neck ice things because it's going to be a scorcher.
Also called beer. So,
well, that not for my daughter. All right, folks, we'll catch you on the flip side.
All right, see you guys.